Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at The Only Colors. Today is Thursday, again, September 9th, and this podcast is brought to you by Matt Ishbia's whatever he wants it to be, really. Yeah. It's whatever he chooses. He is my guy. He's my guy.
He did a very good. He did a thing that might have been so good it might even make ESPN. Don't hold your breath.
Whoa.
But breaking news. This is one we've been sitting on for a little while, Austin. I'm glad to see Ishbia and his company, mortgage organization, provided $500 stipend for every month of the year, I believe, for every single football and basketball player. And he did not forget the walk-ons, Austin. And you could have seen that one coming.
I was going to say, as the newest walk-on factory, he's got mouths to feed just by the sheer number that Izzo's putting out there. He says, I wonder if some of these guys are double dipping. Like, is Malik Carr getting $1,000 a month?
I got to think these guys saw the writing on the wall or something, and maybe they smelled something out and they're like, I could be on both teams.
Yeah. Now hold on. Dear Matt, I've got questions.
United Wholesale Mortgage, big splash. And unlike anything, this is not just cool. No other program in the country has done this. First of its kind. No scale like this has taken place. And that matters.
Listen, it is nice. We've said it before. We'll say it again. It's nice to have billionaire alumni. And John, I think officially I would like to say, let the mortgage wars begin. It seems like they have. The team is brought to you by, or really just the Spartans as a whole are brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. But each one of the players is sponsored by United Wholesale Mortgage. Whatever it is, I'm all for it. It's awesome. It's so cool to be rooting for and like an alumni of a program that's pushing the boundaries of what this NIL can do for students and being really on the cutting edge. And I think like this program in so many ways, like with the actual game itself, like Mark Hollis, for all his flaws, was always great at pushing the boundaries of like, what can we do? Like, they wanted to play a game in the Coliseum. They played a game on the Carrier. They started the Champions Classic. Like, he was always pushing the boundaries when it came to that. And it's cool to see that, you know, the rest of the – it's cool to see that spirit isn't lost. And, you know, Matt Ishbia, listening, he might have gone to see home. Not a big deal. I'm not biased at all in this mortgage wars. But, it's – go Mapes, baby. Just awesome. Just awesome stuff.
Hey, two quick things about this. I saw a lot of chatter about this is just like a pay for play. This is just an end around to pay the players. One, who cares? Why are you pocket watching college kids?
Yes. Two, one good.
two, why don't take a step back and think about how big Michigan State's alumni base is and think about the audience that all these players can reach with their social media followings, most of which are either their fellow students or super fans. Now, who do you think people are going to think of when they need to buy their next home? Which lenders? Probably at the top of their list are going to be United Wholesale Mortgage and Rocket Mortgage, right? I mean, they've bought awareness that you like at such a cost efficient rate, they didn't have to get a Super Bowl commercial. They're going to reach so many people because now it's national headlines. They were the first to market. It's not just Michigan State alumni. This is on Bleacher Report. This is on Yahoo Sports. You know, this is on all the major sports websites. So you've at cost, pretty cost efficiently, because you've only done, if you do the real math, it's not as expensive as, say, doing a full creative campaign. That's expensive. So you could argue the PR value is already paid off in the first day for these guys.
I mean, even beyond that, I think your first point is a poignant one. Like, everyone enjoys piling on billionaires and saying, wow, you could really solve a lot of the world's problems. Well, guess what they're doing right now? They're solving the problem of college athletes not getting paid. Why do you, if anybody's against this, I simply do not understand your line of logic. Two billionaires are paying to, are really trying to fund these, like put food on these college kids' tables. And again, it's not like they weren't getting benefits beforehand, but like, that's amazing. Billionaires do a lot of bad things that serve no public interest. This serves a lot of public interest and allows kids to, like, these, a lot of these guys had to go pro previously and make decisions that long-term were not good for them as individuals because they had to help provide. Certainly not everybody, not all the students have to do that. It's not a universal case, but like, yeah, that happened to a lot of people. And now these billionaires, people with plenty of money, are trying to at least do a little bit to help that. So I think that's pretty amazing. And one other quick thing, John, one other quick thing. These are two men with businesses that are headquartered in the state of Michigan. For anybody from the state of Michigan, again, to your point, who are people thinking of when they're trying to get mortgages? They're thinking of two homegrown organizations instead of going anywhere else. That's keeping money in the state. That's building infrastructure in the biggest city in the state, in Detroit, and just benefits everybody long term. So if you're a fan of the state, if you're a fan of the team, if you're a fan of making sure college athletes can afford to buy meals and support families, you have no excuse but to be thrilled about this, the way that this is going. And I'm sure this is the tip of the iceberg.
It is. And that's the whole thing to the rival fans out there who are all of a sudden very concerned about money in the pockets of teenagers and young adults. I say to you, calm down and keep up, just because you would be singing a different tune if it was your favorite team.
So absolutely.
Relax. So congrats to the players. Certainly a cherry on top to a win. But before we get to the win, Austin, our favorite son, the basketball team, their schedule is fully finalized. Anything jump out?
Well, John, at the risk of being negative, non-con's going to be a bear. We've talked about it before, and this certainly is not surprising as a Michigan State. I mean, this is a Michigan State team after all. What would we be if not masochists for early season difficult games? MSU gets, and we've talked about it before, Champions Classic, plays Kansas. Always a challenging game. They also have to go on the road to Butler. They also have Loyola Chicago guaranteed in the battle for Atlantis. And then you might have to help me here. Who are the other teams in the battle for Atlantis? Potentially like UConn and Arizona State and like some of these other like huge, I believe there's some other huge schools in there too.
Auburn and Connecticut would be the winner or loser depending on what happens. And it gets worse depending on
great
how well you do. So that'll be fun.
Oh, there's also Louisville on December 1st. So yeah, it is going to be, put it this way, we're going to learn a lot about the team right out of the gate, for better or for worse. So that'll be interesting. But I know, John, we were talking about this before we started recording. The early part of the Big Ten season, on the other hand, is a little more lenient.
Yeah, it's nice to play. So there are those two games in December because they expanded the schedule. So you have at Minnesota, who will be probably far and away the worst team in the conference this year. And then you play, I'm blanking, Penn State, I believe, at home. And then you turn around and the next two conference games are at Northwestern, which, as we all know, is a home game. See Friday night. And then you have Nebraska at home. We'll be better, but you got to feel good about starting out that way, considering the non-con schedule. So it's going to be a tough conference, but you probably couldn't have gotten a better draw, I think, at least for the ease into the conference season.
Yeah, and I would even say beyond that, then you go on the road to Michigan, which will be a tough one, but then it's Minnesota at home and Northwestern at home. So your first seven games, that's a nice stretch. Now, of course, it turns into an absolute bear down the stretch. You go at Wisconsin, at Illinois, Michigan at home, at Maryland, at Rutgers, Wisconsin, Indiana. Like, you know, it heats up with the exception of Indiana, obviously. It heats up pretty quickly.
Let's just, as we always say, let's deal with that later, just like we'll deal with the 2022 recruiting class.
Because, yeah, that's a tomorrow problem.
Yeah, Jaden Shutt chose Duke. That's bad. We're running out of steam on the recruiting front. We'll deal with men's basketball later, man.
Yeah, I just wonder if Alvin Ellis IV has any eligibility yet, because we might be knocking down his doorstep. Or I'm also wondering who's at Sunrise Christian. You know, who can we go get?
Tum-Tum. Tum-Tum owes us. He's the head coach there.
Tum-Tum owes us a lot. I agree. He owes me a lot of minutes back.
Okay, so while I am working Tum-Tum to get us another five-star recruit, you can tell us about the atmosphere in Evanston, the first football game with fans, full capacity, that we've seen since 2019.
Yeah, it was pretty electric, I'm not going to lie. As always, very much a Michigan State pro crowd, but it was at least 50-50 MSU to Northwestern fans. And it was just cool to like be back in a stadium and feel the energy and the excitement and the optimism. Like, I mean, this was the first game for a lot of intents and purposes of the Mel Tucker era, the first game he's played in front of any fans, and you felt that energy. You could see him down on the sideline yelling at players. I mean, the players were obviously like super fired up, and like to have that first play of the game, actually, even before that, like the pregame, singing the national anthem, seeing like they had these divers, you know, or the skydivers come in, like, it felt like this really awesome piece of normalcy. You know, it was pretty incredible. But then the first play of the game is Kenneth Walker ripping off a 75 yarder. And I'm screaming at the top of my lungs in a very Northwestern pro section of the stadium.
They're in shock.
It was absolutely shocking. Like first of all, for so many reasons, like, first of all, it's the first play of the season. Like, how awesome is that? It's his first play of his career at Michigan State. How awesome is that? And then just the starkness of the difference between literally almost any play from last year and the explosion that we saw on that play was it was a storybook beginning. But honestly, as we kind of get into more of like the review of the game, that they didn't, I think you saw kind of the Mel Tucker mindset, relentlessness really come through during that game. Cause they didn't take their foot off the gas for a minute, and they ended up winning, 38-21 was the final score.
Yep.
And not only did they not end up, they didn't let their foot off the gas, but like you had Kenneth Walker, wasn't just one big run, wasn't just one big pop play. He had the seventh most rushing yards by an individual game in school history with 264 is what it was. Like, I don't know. What were your main takeaways? I know we want to get a little more detailed here, but what were your takeaways?
Well, I don't think you can wax enough poetic behind what we saw. Whenever you see someone do the seventh best thing of all time, that's pretty cool and should be acknowledged. And, you know, I think the most interesting part is, as you mentioned, this drastic stark difference between having an offense with not just a pulse, but having like a clue. It's the difference between Jay Johnson offense without athletes and a Jay Johnson offense with athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think that's the first thing in my head is he springs one for 75 and I'm like, oh, we got athletes. Like, oh man, let's like, okay. And I have to confess something. I missed the first play. I was very, it was very on brand for the podcast for me to,
that's true.
I just, you know, I was getting to it. And I got to it a little late. It's not as if I had other activities, but didn't get to it. Yeah, kind of like the thumbnail. We're getting to it.
It'll happen in due time.
So anyway, that was pretty incredible to see that. But not only, you know, the 75-yard run, those happen, not a lot, especially not to Northwestern defenses. But breakdowns happen. He had many runs of over 25 yards. And that's not even just like, oh, that's a bad run defense. Like, that's just a special guy at that point, right?
Well, that's not just like a quality player. That's a quality system. That's a quality play caller. That's quality blocking. I mean, he had more rushing yards in this game than any individual had on MSU last year. And he had four more touchdowns than any running backs ran for at MSU a year ago. I mean, it's all of the things that we sort of talked about mm-hmm. in terms of having that extra year, having some plus players, getting impact recruits at positions of need. They all kind of came to life. And I do think, we talked about it last week too. This is not going to be a good Northwestern team. It's just not. It's going to be a bad team. But I think they're going to be functional. And MSU was still able to go out there and really impose their will. And we said that that was a key to this game, because if you weren't going to do that to this Northwestern team, not even to the level that they actually did, but if you weren't going to do that to this team, you're going to have a really hard time doing that to some of the better teams in the Big Ten. And not only did MSU pass that test, they destroyed that test. I mean, they aced that test. And I think that speaks to, I mean, I thought we saw a lot of really impressive push from Jarrett Horst, certainly lived up to the hype, even up to the point where he got a personal foul penalty. And people said that was something he might bring to the table. Don't hate that. I think Nick Samick, I read, was one of the players of the week on the offensive line.
JD Duplain was excellent, run blocker. And so, you know, there's a lot of shout outs, right? And I think it's just, I still can't get over the run offense was so pathetic, not just last year, just in general.
It has been for a while.
For a while. And it's not to say, you know, one game is not a trend. You can feel a lot better about things going into next week than maybe the all off season. The other piece about Kenneth Walker is, you know, there's certainly the offensive line provided him push. You saw him make decisions and plays that you kind of do in NCAA football or Madden. Like, he's bouncing outside.
Yep.
Because, like, and then his third touchdown was Jay Johnson just saying, oh, yeah, I have a running back with 99 speed. I'm just we don't need to make this more complicated than this. I'm just going to give him a swing and let him outrun their linebacker to the pylon. Like, sometimes football's that easy. It's like funny, right? It doesn't have to be complicated sometimes.
No, I think the coaches like to complicate it, but I think, I mean, everything we said, so we're talking a lot about the offense here, and just to put a bow on that part of it, last year was so painful to come out and score 38 points and look competent and seem like you had a game plan. And to give some credit where it's due to Peyton Thorne, not of a quarterback taking any crazy risks, having a quarterback that can put some touch on the ball, having receivers that were making some incredible plays. I mean, I think you saw the chemistry between him and Jaden Reed. Trey Mosley made an incredible one-handed catch. Connor Hayward.
Oh my God.
Finally, I was having several religious moments in the stands when he was making plays, because that dude has been waiting to be used in this role. I'm sure you could go back almost literally 100 episodes in this show and find me saying he should be an H-back. He should be a gadget player. He's got too good of hands. He's too good with the ball once he gets it. Voila. He makes just some incredible plays. He had an unbelievable catch down the sideline. He had a play where he caught the ball about 7 yards short of the first down and then ran over like three guys on the way to the first down. It was It was great. A borderline religious experience for your boy in the stands for that one. So it was amazing. It really, really was. We still didn't see a ton from the tight ends, but you know, we can't ask for everything in 1 week.
Hey, yeah. Again, you know, is it crazy? We found, like you said, potentially a third wide receiver when you have Trey Mosley who showed up. You have a run game, and I think the better part of it is, you know, people are saying like, oh man, I don't know if we've seen enough from Thorne. Can he do it? It's like, okay, but also same people would have been mad if you took the ball out of Kenneth Walker's hands because he had such a great day. So like, it can't be both. So let's just appreciate that, you know, if a guy's hot and you are running the ball easily, just keep doing it. You know,
but
so
this is what you want, right? Like, this is what you want from a quarterback. You want a game manager. Peyton Thorne is never, or at least probably not this year, you know, maybe later on in his career. At this point, he's not going to be this game breaking dude. He's not he's not this super running the ball, crazy athlete, does enough to be dangerous, doesn't have the biggest arm in the world. But if you have a good offensive coordinator and a good running game, I think you saw what he can bring. And honestly, with a team that is so desperately in need of just any type of consistency on offense as a program, like, you can't really ask for a lot more than what you got from Peyton Thorne. And quite frankly, I think what you got from him tonight, if it's combined with what you got from the running game or anything even, you know, kind of close to that, you're going to win maybe more games than people thought at the beginning of the season.
So it wasn't all good. I mean, it was very – wins are good. Defense. Wins are good. And, you know, weirdly, the defense was kind of the area of concern and maybe consistent concern throughout the season here. Fortunately, MSU has a very defensive-minded staff, so you can hope that they will be making market improvement game over game. But honestly, there's a lot left to be desired from specifically the cornerback position. You know, Hunter Johnson played surprisingly – I don't want to say well, but better than we'd ever seen him play before. And, you know, he's not the best quarterback Michigan State will be playing this season. So something's got to change, because also the defensive line was very solid in the run defense, but struggled on their own to generate a lot of rush. So I think that's another area where you got to look at and say, okay, what are we going to do here? You can play, sit back and play defense on a team like Northwestern and probably win the game now that you know you have Kenneth Walker. They missed two field goals. You know, like, they couldn't get a stop to save themselves. You know, there will be better teams than Northwestern. What does MSU have to do, you know, to take the next step?
Yeah, and I think you saw a few things that we thought might happen. I think we're all expecting that front four is going to struggle to generate pressure on its own. I don't know that that's going to change this year unless somebody like a Michael Fletcher or a Tank Brown, two guys we didn't see a ton of, get involved and bring a level of athleticism that the other ends don't really have. I mean, you saw a ton of bodies, but again, those are the two kind of X factors that didn't get into the game a ton. I didn't see much in there at all. So individual, just hat on a hat, they're going to still struggle to do that. However, I think you saw some athleticism from the linebacking core, especially Quaveris Crouch, that MSU certainly hasn't had in at least a little while.
That's right.
And that, I think, as you get progress into the season, those guys get a little more comfortable. You might be able to generate some things that way. But I think you saw that balancing act as a defense. Like, you know, they were not, if you can't get after the pass rusher or if you can't get after the quarterback, your secondary is going to struggle. And if your secondary is not going to hold up, then you're not going to give your defensive front the opportunity to get home when there's only, you know, four man rush. So that one of those two is going to have to improve, or you're absolutely right. Better teams than Northwestern are going to kind of pick them apart a little bit. I was encouraged by the linebacking play, and I hope as they kind of settle into their roles a little bit more that you'll see some improvement. Now, the other thing I will say is, against the pass, yes, I agree with you. Against the run, I thought they were really, really impressive, especially the first half of the game when the game was in its, you know, kind of deciding stages. I mean, they were absolutely stuffing Northwestern's running attack. And again, this is, we keep caveating it. It's still a nice win, but like this is going to be a bad offense compared to the other ones you're going to play. But I think they did what you're supposed to do to bad offenses, and they force a lot of three and outs early. Like you said, they Northwestern missed some field goals, but they forced them into field goal attempts. I mean, they were a lot of that bend don't break mentality. I think you saw kind of come through. And you know, the defense, this is a kind of like a weird territory for MSU where the offense is clearly ahead of the defense. That's rare for MSU. Yeah. And to be honest with you, in a weird way, kind of exciting, because I think we all know the defense can come around, and we know that's where really more of the transfers were than they were on the offensive side. So I'm not surprised by it. And I think that there's more room to improve over there. But I think there were still some positives really to take away from that side of the ball, especially against the run.
Yeah. I mean, we're picking on these guys a little bit because
when you
win by 17, you know, on the road, you gotta pick a few things that gotta get better. But yeah, I mean, there was only one breakdown for the defensive line, as you mentioned, for the Russian defense, one busted play at the very first play, I think, of actually the second half. It was a 50-yard yep. run or so. So beyond that, you know, very tight up front. And, you know, we're picking on, and like I said, Xavier Henderson had a nice game. You know, he cleaned a lot of things up behind him. And you know, if you're forcing Hunter Johnson to throw the ball 43 times, that's a win.
Yeah,
like you
absolutely.
Want. Absolutely. You know what I mean? Like that's not a winning game plan for Northwestern, you got to think. So, you know, yeah, you know, they had to play into our hands. And, you know, you're probably going to see more of the same against similar types of opponents where you say, hey, if we're confident with our ball control offense, that Kenneth Walker or whomever, maybe there's more, you know, that rise to the occasion and mm-hmm. manages the game. If we're confident we can put up more than 20 points, which is like the norm for the past 3 years, it feels like that changes things, right? So you can let people play in front of you on defense and make them have to execute.
Well, I will say this is college. Like at the end of the day, this is college football. Like the quarterback play is going to vary wildly. And I would say the vast majority of times you want the other team's quarterback to beat you. In the NFL, it's a different story where you have so many of just the best of the best playing. But like in college, like look around the Big Ten, truly. I mean, how many quarterbacks are in the Big Ten right now that you're like, ooh, that guy can come out and beat us kind of no matter what, you know, we just got to hope to survive. I would say CJ Stroud, I'd probably put in that even after one game. You know, I'm even a little ambivalent on that one. I'm more defaulting because he's Ohio State's quarterback. But like, are we terrified of Cade McNamara? Are we terrified of Graham Mertz? Are we terrified of, I don't even know who Iowa's quarterback is yet. Like,
Petrus,
Talia Tagovailoa, like,
I mean, yeah, you could make a case for Tua.
And we'll call him Tua.
Sorry, I didn't mean that.
We'll call him Tua. I like Tua better.
You could make a case for what I meant to say was Michael Penix Jr. Until this week.
Okay, fair.
Where he fell apart, and yeah. So you know, like. I don't know.
All I'm saying is I'm okay with this being like, if it's my team's going to stop one thing, run or pass, give me the run all day. If they can be stout against the run, they're going to be in position to compete in or win a lot of games because they're going to make these quarterbacks beat them. And quite frankly, I look around the Big Ten and yeah, you're right about Penix. Penix is a good call. I'm not that worried about too many of these Big Ten quarterbacks.
Yeah,
I'm not that worried about Derek King anymore.
You know who people are worried about? Kenneth Walker III.
As they should be.
That's right. So let's bask in the win. Hopefully we'll get another one. We'll talk about Young Sunsea in a bit, but let's take a commercial break and take a walk around the nation in the Big Ten.
It feels good to be back. Okay. Three, two, one. There we are back, just like Texas.
Oh, wow. You jumped right into it, huh?
I sure did.
Is Texas back? People are saying. They're talking.
About, they're certainly asking.
They held up their end of the bargain against Louisiana, Lafayette, raging Cajuns, 38 to 18. Solid performance from the Longhorns, wouldn't you say?
Considering the numerous losses to Maryland that have happened in this week for them previously, yes, I would say this constitutes a very nice start. I thought it was funny because their running back, Bijan Robinson, despite only running for like, it was like 108 yards and two touchdowns, won National Offensive Player of the Week.
Sure.
I got to tell you, I am so thankful. Like, the disrespect card is so back, and it feels incredible.
Love
just
it.
Incredible stuff.
We love to see it. You know, wasn't the only disrespected player this past week. One Rocky Lombardi, disrespected Northern Illinois Husky. It was given no shot to go into Atlanta. And, you know, people say you don't just waltz into Atlanta, Georgia.
Great point.
And Northern Illinois does. Rocky has done this before. He's not afraid to go into a large stadium that seems very that's actually very quiet and win a game by himself. And he did. Rocky Lombardi, I guess we're just going to call him the Rocky Lombardis now. 22, Georgia Tech 21. Northern Illinois Rocky Lombardis go for two with under a minute to go to win. And we love to see it. We love to see it. And Rocky doesn't let him down. He converts. And your Northern Illinois Rocky Lombardi is 1-0. And I don't know. He's got to be putting people in Ann Arbor in some fits right now as they look down their schedule.
I would have to think so. Rocky's what you call a high variance player. Sometimes he turns in some big ones. Sometimes, you know, he's a little bit more Rocky Lombardi. What I did notice and loved about the 2-point conversion is that it was a laser. He put no touch on that ball. He threw it as hard as he could, as he knows how. I can tell you, I will never try to play catch with him, as I would break several fingers. There's another team I would not like to play against because I would break, I don't know, every bone. And that would be the team you say you want them. You say you do, but you don't. That's the Alabama Crimson Tide, who absolutely smacked. I couldn't believe the game was even this close after watching it when I just saw the final score, but it was 44-13. They made Miami, who was the number 14 team in the country, look like they were playing the high school football. I mean, the offensive line performance from Bama against Miami's supposedly good defensive line was borderline shocking. Well, not shocking really, but pretty dominant. Nothing was surprising. I will say, if there's one thing that you can take away from this game, I don't think you can take a whole lot away from it. If I'm Miami, I'm a little bit nervous about Derek. Like, I'm starting to think the Derek King hype train may have gotten out of the station a little bit too early. Uh-oh. This guy was running, admittedly was running for his life, was injured this offseason, all that stuff. This guy's 24 years old. Mm-hmm. People forget. Mm-hmm. Never really played super high caliber football, and did not look like a guy with a lot of 24-year-old poise or ready to make a lot of decisions. Now, I'm sure that they will improve. I'm sure he will become better. However, I'm just saying, here's all I'll say. It's impossible to take anything concrete away from a week one game against Bama. But Derek King's supposed to be that dude. This is supposed to be Heisman guy. I saw nothing. Like, at least against Bama, sometimes you get like a play or you see, okay, I like sort of get it. Like, here's the hype train. I sort of get where everyone's coming from. Mm-hmm. I saw nothing to make me think that. And I watched a decent amount of this game. So if I'm Miami, the Miami, Texas, are they back spectrum, I feel as though Texas is much further along in that than Miami is. Now, again, big grain of salt, week one against Bama. Pretty impossible to say anything for sure. But, like, I would have liked to see more out of Derek King.
I think a lot of people would. I think Derek wanted it to end, you know, right?
Fair.
You know, it's like, this. Whose idea was this? This was stupid. We could have played anybody. One. We could have picked anybody. You don't have to play Bama until the playoff.
The New York Jets.
Like, unless you're in the SEC, you don't have to play Bama unless you're assigned to them. Like, you don't go out of your way. What are you guys doing? You know, it's silly. Two teams that went out of their way to ruin my night, Georgia and Clemson, who I'm so thankful that the people called this game out for what it was. Awful. Like, these defenses are going to put a stranglehold on a lot of offenses this year. Doesn't mean that I have to sit back and be like, man, what a classic. No, I can still hate the game.
The SEC industrial complex has never been stronger. Like, the fact that Georgia did not score an offensive touchdown and went up to number two in the country. Like, if you want proof that everybody is just like, hey, we're getting these SEC teams in here, and that's just that. Look no further. I gotta be honest. Like, you saw some. Well, I mean, Georgia's defense, I think, is legit. But, like, another guy I was expecting a lot from is DJ Uiagalelei. Learned a little bit about how to pronounce that name. Didn't get a lot. His throw produced the only score of the night, the only touchdown of the night. That's the most I can say about him.
That's something you want to hear if you're a Clemson fan until you learn how it could have gone south on you. Yeah, JT Daniels also not, like, blowing my socks off.
No.
I get it. These defenses are good. As you know, fellow listeners, we rarely acknowledge things as good. These defenses are good. I still can yearn for a little more from Heisman level, you know, or candidates at quarterback positions. Can I not?
Is it so much to ask for an offensive touchdown? True. We're not talking about, this isn't the Red Box Bowl, RIP. Like, we are talking about, like, the biggest game of the first week of the season. And we got crap on a plate. And you know what? Fine. Like, hopefully I'm sure these teams will turn in some incredible performances down the line. But, like, if you want to go back and, like, unless they both turn into, like, the two best offenses in the country, and then you can spin it and be like, whoa, incredible performances by the defenses, you're not going to win a lot of points from me by winning. Like, if I'm Georgia, like, Georgia's not going to, this shouldn't be the game, which it feels like it will inevitably be, that gets them into the, you know, into the playoff because they have this great, you know, non-conference win. It shouldn't be that, but it feels like it's going to be that.
Yeah, I mean, the ACC as a whole, their flagship took a huge hit. Florida State also lost to, I guess you could call it, an ACC team, Notre Dame. Yeah. Went to overtime, and like, both of these teams, unimpressive in a 41-38 game, right? So, like, the ACC, unimpressive in a different way in this game. But this game kind of had everything. Great game. I was entertained in the – this is, like, people watch, you know, the NBA and say, how can you watch college basketball? You know, hardcore NFL fans will say, how can you watch college football? You know, because of games like this, they're hysterical. Like, this is fun when you have storylines like, you know, Mackenzie Milton coming back after a doctor said he probably could never, ever play football again. That was cool. And then he still loses. And I don't know, maybe I'm awful. And that's still kind of funny.
That's sort of the best part, though.
Like, and then you got Notre Dame blows an 18-point lead. 18-point lead. You're the top 10 team in the country. Like, come on, guys. Like, you put the game away. And Florida State scores 14 or 18 unanswered. And then you go. And then you're like – you watched this game, right?
Oh, I watched the whole thing. It was great.
Oh, okay, so jump in, because I just happened to catch the second half. But
yeah, I mean, it was a phenomenal game back and forth. I don't know how Florida State didn't start Mackenzie Milton from the beginning, because I do not understand. And it's not because he was like so incredible, because he really wasn't. Like, he just had the offense moving. Their other quarterback that was in was clearly a really good athlete, but wasn't putting balls in the neighborhood of receivers. And yet they were still kind of staying in the game. I feel like this Notre Dame team, credit to Jack Cohn. I figured he would probably be the one that made them not live up to the hype. He was great. He threw like 400 yards and four touchdowns. Yeah. But
Notre Dame couldn't run the ball.
I know. Notre Dame couldn't run the ball, which is supposed to always sort of be their thing. With two really good running backs. Yeah. And defensively, they couldn't do anything to slow down a bad quarterback and a guy who has not played in two full years and is coming off of like an Alex Smith level injury. Like, that is what would scare me if I'm a Notre Dame fan, is that defense. It took Kyle Hamilton being probably the best prospect in the upcoming NFL draft, but getting two interceptions, neither of them particularly well thrown balls, but both really nice plays on his part. It took that to keep Notre Dame winning this game. And there's a lot better team than Florida State that are going to be on that schedule. But Florida State's got to feel good. I mean, I don't know how Milton's not your guy moving forward. You got to feel like you can make at least a bowl game with him starting, based on the way that offense operated the other night. So yeah, it was a great game. It was such a stupid game, but it was just the best.
That's the best way to describe it, and that's why we love this sport. So let's quick run around the Big Ten, because there were some other stupid games that took place.
Big Ten, it's our way.
So it opened actually with Ohio State, Minnesota, because the Temple Rutgers game got pushed. Ohio State comes in. That's, we talked about this, is exactly when you want to play them. And by the way, this game feels like it was a year ago.
Yeah.
But Minnesota did every single thing right. They had an amazing running back. They had a 3-year starter quarterback, a solid offensive line, good enough defense, home, night game. Started raining, hung around, took a few punches. And then before you know it, they're down double digits and Ohio State covers. And you're like, let's just simulate Ohio State to this playoff, man. Like, what are we doing?
It was a very like Thanos, I am inevitable.
It was. Moment.
It was. It was just that all that it took, because the receivers were getting open and they were popping huge run plays. Like, it was just a matter of time before they started hitting plays that were there the whole night. And for them, it's like, if CJ Stroud is able to complete these passes, call it 30 yards downfield, 25 yards downfield with any type of regularity, which he's clearly talented enough to do. Mm-hmm. They're going to the playoff. They are so far in a league of their own when it comes to Big Ten teams. Like, nobody's close to them. Iowa, which we'll talk about in a second, is in the top 10. Wisconsin is obviously not good. Penn State went on the road, but it doesn't matter. No one's close. And nobody's going to be close for the foreseeable future, especially if Stroud is this guy. So, yeah, I mean, they were – and to your point, like, Minnesota did everything you could do, and it still just all sort of fell apart. So I don't know. Like, when you look at who – I still think Indiana is probably equipped the best to actually hang in and beat Ohio State, because they can actually have an explosive plays in their bag. But, like, I don't know who else. A stupid team like Penn State, maybe, but I feel like they'll shoot themselves. They'll have the gun. There's that meme from Tom and Jerry of the cat, which I believe is Tomcat. Yeah. Okay. I got it. Yeah. And he's pointing the gun into the mouse hole in the wall, and it's coming out bent and shooting him in the face. Right. And I feel like that is actually, like, if I had to describe Penn State in a meme, it feels like that's pretty much it.
Well, the saddest part is some of Ohio State's best players, like, didn't even get touches. Like, Travion Henderson is
– oh, my God. Unbelievable. So
good. Like, like, I am uncomfortable with how good he is already. It's three.
Well, he just decided he was going to score.
Yep.
Like, he caught that little swing pass to the left side. He saw six Minnesota defenders in front of him, and he says, I can split all of them if I just go to, like, 80% speed. And he was like, and he just flipped through. It was effortless speed.
And by the way, he doesn't start because the guy in front of him averaged 14 yards a carry.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, things are tough.
So everyone's excited for that game.
So, you know what, though? Minnesota will be fine. They did lose Mo Ibrahim.
Well,
sucks. You know, he's a stud. But, you know, I think they'll be fine. Let's keep moving. Rutgers beat Temple 61-14. 61.
Not your dad's Scarlet Knights.
Plucky Rutgers. I'll say it's difficult to score 61 points when you only have 365 yards of offense. But five turnovers from the Temple Owls will help that cause. So, I don't know, man. Rutgers is just like, I don't know what type of sacrifice they made to what God to get all this turnover luck in the first games of seasons, but here we are.
Oh, but the other shoe when it drops is going to be a special, special breed of comedic football. I mean, listen, Rutgers, I'm glad that they're using up all the luck now, though. Like, use it when the hope can be the highest, because Rutgers fans deserve it. But, man, you know what's coming. It's like a 9-turnover game against Penn State or something equally stupid that's going to happen. Like, they'll lose a game because of some stupid, like, some Lions-type rule that nobody even knew existed will cost them a game.
Oh, man. That hurt personally.
Poor guys.
So, yeah, a lot more. We'll see how Rutgers does without the turnover luck. But, hey, it's better than not having it.
Absolutely.
Penn State goes into Madison and upsets Wisconsin 16-10 in a very Georgia-Clemson-esque game. I'm sorry. I just want to go on record. I got crucified for saying, let's wait and see about Graham Mertz. After his first game as a freshman last year, we had one incompletion. I got absolutely run on Twitter by Wisconsin fans. And all of a sudden, now we got people. Now people are talking about, should Mertz start? Like, just sometimes you have to take a breath, especially with quarterbacks. Because, listen, things can, you never know what's going to happen.
You know what I saw, which made me realize that every bit of hype about Graham Mertz was undeserved? And I saw where he was from. From Overland Park, Kansas.
Can't have it.
Done. Done. All your star rankings are now invalid. I'm sorry. There's so much good talent out there in high school football right now that if you're playing in, like, one of the only places that doesn't have it, I can't realistically expect you, especially as a quarterback, to be successful. I wish I had known he was from there before the hype, because I would have called this one literal years ago.
I mean, 22 of 37, 185, and two interceptions.
It was bad. In an imminently winnable game.
Oh, and what else did we say on the pod? Pat ourselves on the back. We don't trust Wisconsin's rushing attack, which is a weird thing to say. 58 carries for 174 yards with a long of 19.
With a Clemson transfer running back.
Come on. And don't get me wrong. Penn State didn't do anything to help themselves. 18 carries for 50 yards. They gave up and put the ball in the hands of Sean Clifford, who, I mean, was serviceable. He was fine. No, but like six. Wisconsin.
He's always going to be fine. I will say Penn State's front seven was flying. Flying around the ball. That's what's going to keep them in games as the year goes on. And if it's not that, then I'm not sure what they're going to do.
If they waited until the very end of the game, that Penn State's off. Like, Penn State, man, jeez. I don't know what to make of this one. I think it's an impressive win. it's an impressive win. Going into Camp Randall and winning is a big deal. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how you do it. Ugly, no one cares. It's a win because it is so hard to win there. I'm looking forward to watching Penn State and a few other games to see if once they do what they want to do, how good they can be. Mm-hmm. So, all right, keep it moving. Michigan takes down Western Michigan 47-14. Listen, the hype train, you can hear it in the distance.
Oh, baby, it's humming.
Check it. They went from we want Harbaugh out, and they're not saying they want him to stay, but they're not saying they want him out. Those are calming down, because then they looked across the plains to Iowa and saw their second savior, mm-hmm. Matt Campbell, struggling with Northern Iowa, and said, "Oh, that's the guy we wanted." So it's getting very interesting over there. The fan base is really twisting and turning in the wind here, but they can't help but feel really good about themselves. It was a solid win. It was.
It was a little we were in Ope territory for a second there in the first half. But at the end of the day, the athletes won out.
Of course, as they normally do in this sport. But hey, now, you know, like I was just saying, the hype train was a little late this year. Mm-hmm. But I think it'll be on time at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah. And the only thing that is a little bit of a bummer is that Washington managed to slow it down a little mm-hmm. bit because they lost to Montana, who apparently has a football program.
We'll get to that one. Okay. Nebraska bounces back with a 52-7 win over Fordham. Okay.
Congrats.
Fine. Okay. Iowa, Indiana. So did you see any of this?
I did not get to watch it. I just saw the box score, and I could not believe my eyes. Ooh. And I live bet it at Indiana plus 19.5 and felt great. And, yeah, that didn't work out.
You live bet just to cover 19, right?
Cover 19.
Oh, okay. Thought you were feeling really frisky on a money line. Iowa, 30.
Oh, no.
Indiana, 6. And here's a game that happened. You mentioned I think it was you were talking to me earlier. Iowa's front seven just made Penix's life hell. And here's what happened. And we've seen this happen. I'm going to date ourselves a little bit. A game plan fall apart before it starts. Remember when MSU in 2011 went into Iowa City and had a really Kirk Cousins team?
Oh, yeah. I remember it well.
Breaks beat off him 39-6. Still remember it. I was there. It was a tough. And it had – I don't think the score was reflective of the teams, but it just went south so fast. And then you completely threw out the game plan, right? And it kept spiraling. So, you know, Iowa scores and Penix throws an immediate pick 6. And all of a sudden you're down 14-0 before you can blink. And you're like, oh boy. And you try and settle in. And then there's another pick 6. And then there's another pick before halftime. And it's like, holy crap. It's just got way out of hand. And so they say, Austin, don't just waltz into Iowa City.
Oh, if they've said it once, they've said it a million times. Mm. Yeah, that's tough. I mean, God, we were saying this last week, too. It's funny how everyone was kind of saying, oh, man, best Indiana team in so long. And they're number 17. And then Iowa's there at 18. And then they go in and the moment's just simply too big. You got to feel for them. I mean, you got to feel for them a little bit only because, you know, they don't get into this territory all that often. But then I remember they're also Indiana basketball fans and I stopped feeling bad. On the other hand, frisky Iowa is so alive. In time for El Asico.
Well, maybe a little too alive. I feel like almost they need to take an L and settle back into their 18-22 ways.
Yeah, the time's coming. Don't worry. That L is not far.
Speaking of comedy that you just have to sit back and appreciate that you can all see coming, but the joke still lands. Illinois coming off a big win against Nebraska falls on their face to the University of Texas San Antonio Roadrunners 37-30. I mean, come on, Bert.
Everything about it is just it's just pure heroin. Like it hits so good and so hard. Like what a rush. Bert Bielema. I mean, now imagine being Nebraska. No, how stupid must you feel?
Very. So stupid. Good. You should feel stupid. What? Illinois, just doing Illinois things, huh? And that poor fan base, they had about 5 days to feel great.
And those are the ones I actually feel bad for. Indiana, I stopped feeling bad for. Illinois, I actually feel bad for. They don't deserve that.
Maryland did very Maryland things like they do. Came out and played really well in a non-con P5 game, beating West Virginia 30-24. I think you mentioned this last week. I'm not willing to pass any judgments on a Maryland team until at least October.
Absolutely not. Yeah, that is – that's, and this week does nothing to change my opinion.
Oregon State tries to waltz into West Lafayette. You don't do that. And Purdue wins 30-21. How did Purdue start getting absolutely stud wide receivers? When did that become a thing?
I don't know. I feel like the Jeff Brohm thing lands with a very specific breed, and it appears to be wide receivers because they know they're going to throw the ball a billion times a game.
With bad backs.
Yeah.
Good wide receivers. David Bell, 8 receptions, 134 yards. He's, you know, outside of Ohio State's locker room, for my money, the best wide receiver in the league, probably, right?
Mm-hmm.
If not, at least top 5.
Yeah, he's certainly one of. I need to get more familiar, to be honest with you, but with just everybody else in the country. But like, yeah, I know he's a stud and he lived up to it.
So, but Purdue did the thing they had to do, as you said. We were gonna. You got to fire Brohm if you don't win.
And yeah. This is a pink slip game for Brohm, and he managed to do it.
He didn't know we put him on watch, but he was on pack watch. So okay, let's jump to the national games coming up that are big. A couple, Texas. There aren't very many. We really got ahead of ourselves last week and had a lot of big ones. Not many this week. Most of them in the Big Ten, actually. But nationally, Texas heads to Arkansas. I think this one could be Texas falling on their face a little bit. I don't think Arkansas is any good, but I think Sam Pittman has a bad team that he can coach up, and Texas might be feeling themselves.
I mean, yeah, this is from the aesthetic or the peripherals of this game. It has Texas loss written all over it. but that being said, I know nothing about what Arkansas does as a team. I know Sam Pittman, like you said, is well regarded as a head coach, but yeah, I don't know a lot about him. But you know, I also think like that's the thing about being a major program like that is like you have that target on your back every single year, and if you are not, forget every single year, every single week of every single, like there's no time, like when you come to town for Arkansas. These students have probably been looking forward to this game for 4 years since they scheduled the game, however, 25 years ago or whenever it was. Like,
yeah,
it's a huge deal. You need to be on your game because otherwise people are coming for your neck.
It's true. And well, that's why you go there too, right? So you can,
absolutely. So you absolutely
can fail to live up to the expectations. The other huge rivalry, I think, in the country, not the other, a huge rivalry game in the country that I don't think gets quite enough hype is, and maybe it's because it happens usually late at night, Utah and BYU. These teams, these programs hate each other. And I don't know it's because they are not, as of recently, one of them's become a P5 program. Maybe that was part of it. But this is a game worth watching, if only because it gets nasty. It can get nasty.
Yeah, those Mormons really can get nasty. I call this one the Milk Bowl. I feel like there's a lot of whole milk being drank during the tailgates of this game because we know there's no alcohol being consumed. So maybe people are getting real frisky and spiking some eggnog. Who knows? I don't know how you get around it. Because it's literally like illegal.
I don't know. I don't think.
I don't know. But Utah it feels like an aggressively white game to me.
Well, I'm probably not wrong. If you're Utah Jazz vibes, you know.
Big time.
The fan base. Here's a game to keep an eye on. Alabama Alabama just puts the hurt on Miami, Florida. Well documented. We know this. We talked about it. I wouldn't assume that you can just show up and beat Appalachian State, Miami. I mean, Miami hosts App State. That's a solid team. You might even argue that's a solid program. You know, this is a program now that has asserted itself in the Sun Belt. I'm not necessarily even putting them on upset watch or Ope watch. I'm going to put them on Ope watch.
Oh.
Because I just, when you get your ass kicked like that, certainly there's going to be a lot of attention to detail this week. But I think there's just a general assumption, and you're like, well, and they're right. It can't be any worse, Alabama's the best of the best. But I just think you have to really channel in, because as you mentioned with Arkansas, Texas, you don't think App State has been thinking about this one for how long, right? To get the opportunity to
Absolutely.
Go.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, so just put them on Ope watch.
That's fair. Again, this is one where you need to see something from your supposed Heisman guy in Derek King. Because if I'm not getting a damn good performance out of him in this one, I start to officially get a little bit nervous. Because who knows? You might be playing a really good defense in a week after that.
Uh-oh. Okay. So let's jump to the Big Ten quickly. I think the only thing that jumps out to me about the first game, Illinois at Virginia, which I do not think I could think of two more irrelevant or non-sexy football teams in the country. Like, if you had to pull two P5 ones out of the hat, you mentioned Oregon State last week. They're up there. Rutgers, too. But Illinois, Virginia is something not even a mother could love. And they kick off at 10 a.m., dude. 10 a.m. Central.
Oh.
They just put them on the ACC network. Sure.
Yeah, it's better that way. I mean, this could be a fun basketball game, but yeah, I mean, this is two guys from, these are two teams from the bottom third of their respective conferences with the same colors. I'm really not getting a lot out of this game. Neither of them with particularly fun offenses. Getting much from this.
These are two guys that from two different friend groups that both of these guys really want to be accepted and a part of something, and then they've been kind of like talking shit to each other all night, and the friend groups are like, okay, yeah, like go for, like, I don't know, I'm not supporting you fighting this guy, but also it might be fun. And then they start fighting, like there's an actual fight that takes place outside the bar, and the both friends groups are like, I don't even like this, like I don't even I don't even care. Like, I don't even want this to happen. And so basically nobody wins. So that's how I feel about this game.
Yeah, I mean, it's nobody feels good about winning, no matter what.
No, and the Big Ten and ACC don't care. It's like
nobody cares. This is a very who cares game. Moving on.
Minnesota hosts Miami, Ohio, trying to get back on track. I think Minnesota is, despite losing their, their best player, is on – has a very manageable schedule, and they could potentially even run off 8 straight. I think
that would be good for them. I think this is a great place to start. Miami's bad.
I think this is where their train gets rolling. Northwestern tries to get back on track, hosting Indiana State. Okay. Go.
Sure. For it.
Why not? Ohio State. Oh yeah. Here we go. At 11.
This is a good one.
Ohio State hosting Oregon. Ohio State, no breaks. I mean, they jump on the road at Minnesota, who will be a very solid team, I think. Then you host top 10 Oregon next week. Okay, but still favored by 14. Like, jeez.
Yeah, and like if I'm betting this game, I'm probably picking them to cover, to be totally honest with you. I mean, I'm sure Oregon's great, but I don't know if Kayvon Thibodeau is going to be 100%. I know their quarterback is a little bit unproven, so it's like me, you know, I'm just not totally sure where to go. I'll just bet Ohio State until they play Bama, basically. I think they've reached that level for me.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason not to at least go make some money on money lines with them. Rutgers continues their week round robin of the Northeast, taking on Syracuse. As I mentioned, they played Temple, then Syracuse. It's just the Northeast, they just are so bad at football, dude. Boston College, UConn, Syracuse, Rutgers. It's yes, like, come on, guys. Combine and make one team. Like, make an ultra team.
Just the Northwest team?
Northeast.
I agree. Oh, yeah, Northeast. Yeah. I think we should conglomerate the way that they do with New England.
Yeah.
It should be New York, flat line across, and there's everything up there. Yeah, I would agree. It should probably just come together and be one thing.
Who says no? speaking of, Purdue travels to UConn and is a 33.5-point favorite. Listen, if you're a 33.5-point favorite on the road and you're Purdue, what are we doing? Like, how is this happening? UConn, the only real thing relevant about this, Randy Edsall, after losing by double digits to Holy Cross, he looked in the mirror and said, I don't need this. I don't need to do this. Like, why do I do this?
I saw somebody tweet, once again, retiring is rarely a bad idea. And I have to agree. After that damning video of him trying to hype the team up being met with exactly zero hands into the hand pile, we knew it was Randy's time. And he leaves behind he leaves some things behind. I'm not sure what they are, but I'm sure he's a nice guy. That's about all I can say for old Randy.
Guys, UConn, I told you.
He doesn't have to work anymore.
I told you this season might be something special to behold, and it has given so much already in just two games. Ball State heads to Penn State. I think Penn State obviously is going to take care of business, but I'm more interested to see if Dotson can get rolling, Noah Kane can get back on track, see if they of all teams can contend with Ohio State is kind of what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I mean, that offense is going to really have to get going, and this is a good time to do it.
Here's game. Buffalo heads to Nebraska. Buffalo dropped 69 points in their opener. Nice. And you can't feel great about that if you're Nebraska, right?
Yeah, I don't think you can feel great about anything if you're Nebraska, even after last week. I mean, you have to come back at the end of the day and realize you played Fordham. And Buffalo, like, sneaky, hasn't had awful teams recently. Like, the guy ran for, like, 8 touchdowns last year.
That was awesome. Is Buffalo the best team in the Northeast?
My answer is the fact that I don't have an answer.
That's a problem.
I think that's about as fair as it could be.
Yeah, that's already bad. I mean, look, Scott Frost, don't get caught looking ahead, guys, to your game at Oklahoma. I mean, you got to deal some problems at home here. The Big Ten game of the week, Junior, Al Asico, Iowa at Iowa State, ABC. Iowa State, a 4-point favorite, a little surprising to me considering the results of the last two games. But that's what I guess the home team's getting the points here, plus an additional one. What do you think? Who do you got?
I'm going to side with Iowa because I'm just going to follow my heart here. Like, I just want Iowa to win because I think it'd be fun. I love Frisky Iowa. I think that's very well documented. Mm-hmm. And it'd be nice to see somebody that – I don't think anybody has a chance against Ohio State, but like at least Iowa, if they're winning games like this, listen, if you beat Indiana and then you beat Iowa State to start the year, it's not Ohio State, but like you have to kind of take them a little bit seriously. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, could be fun. I'm personally hoping, I don't usually do the root for the conference thing, but I find Matt Campbell to be annoying because I don't think he deserves the hype. And, I think Iowa's funny. Frisky Iowa is always funny. They'll find a very stupid way to win, and I'm excited to watch it.
Oh, Iowa will do something like win this game and then go lose a clunker at Northwestern later this year.
Exactly. It sets up maximum comedy.
Yeah, you know it's coming, and that's fine. You know, it's like we've seen these movies. We know the punchlines, but we still like it. and I'm still going to keep watching.
I still love watching the movie.
I still love it. Eastern Michigan heads into Wisconsin in the night game. I think you might want to take Wisconsin's points. It's like 25 right now. I think that's an easy cover.
Yeah, that feels like a manageable number.
Indiana hosts Idaho. Who is scheduling this stuff? Like, I'm mad. This is so.
I want to know how much is Idaho making. That's what I want to know.
I don't know, but like, come on, like at least get a regional team around here so like fans can come and enjoy it. This is dumb.
We're playing the Kibbe Dome. Go to Idaho.
You don't just waltz into the Kibbe Dome.
You sure don't.
Howard travels to Maryland. Sure, at least that's a regional one. Big Ten Network at night, and then as you mentioned, Michigan hosts Washington. Famously coming off of an FCS loss, scoring out in the opening drive of the game, I might add, and then not again the rest of the way. I can't imagine a more worse start to someone's tenure than – is it Jimmy Lake is the new coach? Oh, man. Talk about falling on your face, dude.
Hey, you want to spin zone it? Can't get any worse.
I guess. Michigan.
I mean, they were ranked. They were ranked number 20 in the country coming into the year. This could go. This goes one of two ways. Like, either they are truly this bad and they lose by 100 to Michigan, which is very on the table because it'd be a very Michigan thing to do, and then to claim, "Wow, what a great win." Or they're pissed off, and truly they were like basically practicing for Michigan, and there's a little bit of caught you sleeping type of situation, and they come in and actually beat Michigan because we don't know anything about Michigan. Yeah, they beat the crap out of Western. Like, congratulations. What am I supposed to do? Pat you on the back? Like, you're Michigan. You're supposed to do that.
Yeah, they did what you'd expect. I think you're going to see actually a Michigan win that people are going to come away feeling less enthused, but because of the Montana result more than anything. And we don't know if that's indicative of this Washington team or not. I do know that 7 points against an FCS team,
it's bad.
That's not good, folks. So, oh boy, speaking of FCS teams, it's time to change gears. And we hope Michigan State scores more than 7 against Youngstown State. But before we do that, we need to take a lap around why this program stinks.
Ah, yes, indeed we do. Hold, please. I'm going to pull this up. I did not have it ready to go, but we've got some good ones in here.
I got one unprompted. Thank you, Arpan Lobo. His submission, Youngstown isn't even a state. Good point.
Probably the best one. I've got some other good ones.
Okay.
Go MSU Buttboy 69 obviously chimed in with a couple good ones. His first one is, because that program makes Charmin look rough. Don't believe me? Their mascot is a penguin that can't handle the cold and needs a scarf. Tremendous point. Tremendous point.
The penguins, dude? Like
the penguins. In Ohio, figure that one out. The ZTJ 521 says the median age of Youngstown is a year older than the median age of the USA. Youngstown, more like Oldstown. I appreciated that one a lot.
Deep cut. You had to search for that one. I like it.
Yeah, I appreciate the effort there, Zeej. McMathgetball says the running back had only 242 rushing yards and 2 rushing TDs in their opener. Principal Skinner meme, pathetic. we also had, and I actually liked this one. Nick_Nickley says their stadium's nickname is the Ice Castle.
Whoa.
I think that's sweet.
Yeah.
Do you have any others that came your way that you thought were particularly good?
They provided us a Pelini brother, I believe. So I don't know how much we can really talk.
Yeah, can we be mad at them?
No, but they also
out of the deal.
They also gave us Jim Tressel, right?
They did give us Jim Tressel. They did give us Bo Pelini. I think Carl might have worked there. They gave us Mark D'Antonio. Those are the good things.
They gave Carl a job. That was nice of them.
That was really nice of them.
So I don't even know if you can gamble on this one, folks. It's hard. You can probably find a line somewhere, but rarely FBS versus FCS you're going to find a line. Reason is I think there's about a 98% computer average that MSU should win. So, you know, if you're not feeling comfortable going in the fourth quarter, something went drastically wrong. Last year they went 1-6, but they did start out the year with a win over the Incarnate Word Cardinals, which I think you pointed out to me was a nice little double entendre.
Yeah, I like that because it could mean a cardinal, like a church cardinal or an actual cardinal bird. And I that's like, nice things about Incarnate Word.
So would you do me a favor?
Real quickly. I think Incarnate Word might be a Bishop Sycamore situation. Like, I'm not convinced that this is a school. It's for the record.
That's actually, you know, I don't – we should investigate. We're on it, folks.
Someone look into it.
Hey, so – We're going to bring back one of our favorite bits that we haven't done in a while, and that is roster names. And this is where Austin just opens the link to their team and reads his favorite roster. We haven't looked in advance, and he's just going to say his favorite ones. And we don't even know if these guys play. It's just literally roster names. So take it away.
Thank you, John. I would like to start with the name of the best player on the team, but I really genuinely think it's one of the better ones you're going to find, and that is Demetric Crenshaw. And the reason why I like Demetric's name so much is because it's spelled D-E-M-E-A-T-R-I-C. Ooh. Demetric. Mm-hmm. The meat trick. I got to say, there's just a lot of really powerful energy coming from that name that I appreciate. I appreciate quite a bit. Let's see here. What else do we have? We also have Jameel McLaughlin. Awesome name. Andrew Ogletree. Josh Burgett. That's not a particularly cool one. Dre Rushton. Oh, wow. And he's a running back, and it's spelled D-R-A. That's good. London Pearson. Let me keep going here. What else we got? Chase Glover Rogers. I love a good hyphenated name. Oh, and he's from West Bloomfield. Hey. Natavius Payne. Oh my gosh, we hit some serious gold here. There's a punter from Australia named Paddy Lynch, somehow not Irish. Here's a good one. Jontavious Davis Boner. Wow. Jontavious Davis Boner. That is tremendous. We also have a linebacker, freshman linebacker, Sir Jerome Treadwell.
Love him.
Wow. Like Sir Darian Adams for those old heads like us. Wow. Those are tremendous names. Really, I forgot how much. Oh, okay. We'll end with this one. Hayden Gump. From Girard, Ohio.
That just Hayden was very big, very Big Ten. Here's one other aside that we like to share. Defensive back Keon Martin on his outlook facing Michigan State. I approach this game like every other game. One thing I do before every game, every receiver that I guard, no matter what team it is, I follow them on Instagram just so they know who I am, you know, like a few pictures, just so they see my face and know who I am. And I think that is one of the most subtle, best trash talk I think you could ever do.
Like, that is, I think he should find out who their girlfriends are and follow them, because this is a criminal, this is like criminal mastermind stuff.
Yeah, like a few of their photos. Make them click on your profile and be like, who is this?
And, oh, I just got a follow. Oh, it's this corner.
Mind games, baby. I love it. So
you got to find an edge any way you can get it.
You do. So what do we think, Austin? Give me the lowdown on the Penguins.
Yeah. So as you said, they took on the Incarnate Word double entendre Cardinals last week. Good news, they won. Mm-hmm. Bad news, they won 41-44 in overtime. Listen, call me a I wouldn't call myself this incredible historian. However, typically overtime wins against teams that may or may not be actual schools, not a great thing to hang your hat on. So the Penguins, listen, they're 1-0. Congrats to them. Based on what I can tell from the box score, because I make my solemn promise to you, I will not watch any Incarnate Word football this year. they are very much a running team. Their running back, Jameel McLaughlin, as we talked about before, had 29 carries for 242 yards and 2 touchdowns. But really what gives it away is that Dmitri Crenshaw, the quarterback, had 20 carries himself for 81 yards and 2 touchdowns. They also had another running back with 12 carries. So to put that into perspective, those 61 carries to 12 passes for the Penguins. So needless to say, I think you can expect a lot of running out of the Youngstown State Penguins. On the other side of the ball, the Incarnate Word Cardinals, often referred to as one of the more potent air attacks in the country, obviously. But knowing that, they still went out and threw up 352 yards and 4 touchdowns. Cameron Ward, Incarnate Word's quarterback, threw for 350 and 4 tutties to a variety of different receivers. 4 receivers for them had over 70 yards receiving. They also had a 100-yard rusher. Kevin Brown had 19 carries for 118 and 2 touchdowns of his own. So Youngstown State runs the ball and gives up passing yardage. I will say that if you're drawing up an opponent that you want Michigan State to play that's going to be a cupcake, they fit this profile. You're gonna find out two things. You're going to find out if MSU's run defense is legit or not, because for all the things that are wrong with Youngstown State's defense, they can clearly run the ball a little bit, and they do so in kind of a weird way that the quarterback's getting 20 carries in the game. Additionally, you're going to find out how much Peyton Thorne is – well, you'll find out two things. You'll find out if the running game is real, because obviously they can give up some yardage. If it was a fluke, MSU will struggle on the ground. If not, they'll succeed. You'll also have maybe an opportunity to see Peyton Thorne kind of turn it loose a little bit. I think that would be beneficial for everybody, and maybe make people come away feeling a little bit more at ease, confident, maybe feeling that he's got a little more he's a little more dynamic than maybe he showed. He was much more of a caretaker against Northwestern, but which is not a bad thing. I think, like we talked about, that's gonna help MSU win a decent amount of games this year. But that being said, this is the kind of game you look at. You're like, listen, if they can't run the ball, if he can't make some plays with his arm, and if they can't stop the run, then you start to worry a little bit about some longer term issues with the team. But I got to say, if they come out and can dominate the line of scrimmage kind of the way that they did for the most part against Northwestern, can create some pop plays, this one should be, like you said, I don't know that you're going to find a line on it, but whatever it is, you can't feel too bad taking MSU in it.
Yeah, I think, you know, there you want to see improvement. You want to see the offensive line continue to dominate. You want to see the defensive line break up any of this unique rushing attack before it can even take let our linebackers have to diagnose it, right? You're hoping that the defensive tackles busted up beforehand, and they did that against Northwestern. You hope for more of the same. I think you also want to see maybe you want to see team play well enough that you have a different quarterback in there, and not to create a controversy. Or the other flip of the coin is you keep playing Peyton Thorne so he can find a rhythm. I don't know. Not my call. What you don't want is a quarterback controversy. So. And I don't think you're going to get one regardless of how well a quarterback plays in this game, because Miami's coming up. But, you know, this might also be a huge opportunity for some young guys that we only saw one freshman. Keon Coleman was the only one who saw the field. This might be a game where you see some freshmen get a crack to see if they're worthy of actual playing time later on.
That's what you hope for. That's what you hope for in this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's not to say this is a guaranteed one, but this is going to be the easiest game on the schedule. You know, so you got to take care of business. You can't. You had a good win against Northwestern. You can't look ahead to Miami. Win the game. Win the game. You got to get. You want to be take the next step as a program. You don't overlook opponents. You win these types of games. And you win them handily. One more fun thing about Youngstown State for our very old head listeners. Advisor to the coach for Youngstown State, Mike Tomczak. Does that name do anything for you? He was a
Steelers quarterback, right?
That's right. He was also he's a long NFL journeyman quarterback for the Bears, Packers, and Steelers from 85 through 1990. I just find that fascinating. He was an old Ohio State quarterback back in the early 80s. I find that fascinating that he is on the staff.
Guy loves the game.
Football guy.
Big time. Big time. Football. To be an assistant 30 years after you retired to Youngstown State head coach is a commitment to the game of football. There is no question.
He's got to take a page out of the Randy Edsel book. Retirement is rarely a bad thing, right?
It's rarely the wrong decision. Rarely.
So have fun if folks go into the game. First home game for Michigan State and with fans in quite some time. Enjoy yourself. Have a few dad pops. Don't get too wild, but enjoy it, man. This should be a fun one.
Maybe get pretty wild. Just don't be offensive and don't hurt anybody. You can get as wild as you want. Have a good time. I hope the students show up, show out. MSU struggle with attendance in these games in prior years. I like to think that won't be the case in this one, given how long it's been since students have been in the stadium. But yeah, it's exciting. I mean, Mel Tucker's first home game in front of the crowd. You want to be there for that if you can be. So parting words, John?
Yeah, two quick things. While you're there, enjoy that Michigan State's creative team is labeling Spartan Stadium the Woodshed. I don't know how you feel about it, but they want to pack the Woodshed.
I think it's great.
I think it's hitting me the right way. And the other thing, it sounds like we will no longer be doing Thunderstruck, but this week we will be swag surfing. Oh, Austin, I knew awesome. That would be you, and I wanted to hit you with it.
Oh man, you can't! Wow, I'm borderline speechless. Like there is no bad time to play that song. Truly. Like it is whenever it comes on, no matter where you like, it's one of those songs you stop and you're just like, yep, I'm going to go ahead and listen to this and get super into it right now. Wow. That is fantastic. I do hope at some point, just again, to date myself, I hope they bring back Take It to the House at some point, because I loved when they'd play Take It to the House. And it was the only time we ever took it to the house was when we played that song. So yeah, I hope that happens at some point, but man, swag surfing, that is phenomenal news. Thunderstruck's played out.
If you are going and you don't know what to do, Google it.
Now.
There's a very, that you can't be left not knowing what to do. It's very easy,
no.
But don't be the guy or gal who doesn't know what they're doing.
That's embarrassing. You should already be embarrassed. You have a chance to prevent your embarrassedness. I'm sticking with that pronunciation. right now, if you go and do your homework, which will take you all of like 8 seconds and maybe a couple of YouTube videos.
And you'll enjoy it. You'll watch a lot of the videos, I'm guessing.
You will, because it is pure. Awesome. All right, John, that was a fun week one. This should be a fun week two.
Keep it rolling.
Look to it. All right, guys. Thanks for sticking with us as always. For John, this has been Austin. We'll catch you next week.
See you.